2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
KSL at night. KSL at night.
All right, welcome back to KSL at night. I'm your host, Derek Brown, and we've had a lot of fun today. Covered a lot of things going on at the national level, but now we're going to bring it right here, make it local, and onto a local issue that is plaguing Utahns, and that is freight trains. Now, for those of you that have had the experience of being stuck behind a freight train or waiting for it to go, it's a really frustrating process. And we have a member of the Salt Lake City Council who has used what I love, and that is he's used humor to address the issue, to bring it to light and to make people aware of it. And that is City Council Member Alejandro Puy, who represents the 2nd District. So Council Member Puy, thanks for joining us on KSL at Night.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, so first of all, I got to say, I love the fact. So I've seen this this article you wrote, which is actually hysterically funny. And I love that because so many times in politics, you have people who have an issue that is kind of upsetting and they scream and yell and shout and whatever. And you've used, like, I was giggling when I read this, and I think you're going to get a lot more traction and a lot more people, you know, looking at the issue of freight trains when you do that. But anyway, on that note, tell us a little bit about, first of all, set the stage for us. What is the issue with freight trains in Salt Lake City that has gotten your attention?
So, sometimes it feels like we live on the wrong side of the train tracks. The trains come at random times for us. They are very long, sometimes 2 or 3 miles long. Sometimes they even stop on the tracks and you have no idea what's going on. You have no idea when you're going to be out of that trap and when you're going to be able to cross on to the other side for whatever reason. Sometimes it's an emergency. Sometimes you're going on a date or you have dinner reservation. Sometimes you just want to go to the other side for whatever reason. And it's affecting our community very, very badly on the west side of Salt Lake City. And we need to find solutions for this.
So, first of all, talk to us a little bit about the article that you wrote. And I got to set the stage here. Just what he's done is he has these great pictures of himself with the trains passing. And in one picture, you're having a barbecue and you've got steaks on the grill. Another one, the train's passing and you've got a floaty from a pool that you're sitting in. I mean, that's really, really funny. So, and where did he post this so that people could sort of see what it is you're talking about?
I mean, we created a website. It's tinyurl.com/SLC trains. tinyurl.com/SLC trains. But we, you know, on the city council website and on the city council social media is being shared right now, and there are several articles being written about it. But yeah, we have tried to make fun of the things you could be doing when you're waiting for the train. You could be having a barbecue, or you could be enjoying a floaty as if you were on the pool, or you could be having a coffee, just enjoying the sight, a picnic maybe, or some plain table games. Those are none of the things that all of us want to do by the train tracks, but it feels like we lose hours of our day waiting for the train. Sometimes they take 40 minutes, 45 minutes, and sometimes even longer for a train to move and get out of their neighborhood, our neighborhood. And this is why we need to capture stories. Right now we're trying to get stories. Salt Lake City doesn't own the train tracks. Salt Lake City doesn't own these train companies, but you know, we need to get stories of how this is affecting your life. Today we heard about a Salt Lake City dispatch member that read the story and told me that she had to guide a mother giving birth on how to get away from the stop train because she was stuck in it to get to the hospital. We heard about a family that lost access to a concert because they were late. You could be 45 minutes ahead of time, and this could put you way, way behind on this. I heard of a story of on a date, someone missing out on a date because they were stuck behind the train tracks, on the wrong side of the train tracks. So we want to hear your stories, no matter how silly they might be. We hear stories from, our safety emergency responders in our city sometimes, that they take the longer route because they want to avoid the chances they're going to be stuck by the train. Right now, what I need from everybody is to tell me their train story. How did it affect you? How is it affecting us every day? It might be a simple story, but we want to hear from you.
And where are the main issues in terms of streets? I mean, obviously, if you're on like 6th North or, the 5th South, I mean, there's a number of sort of overpasses over the train tracks. But then I'm assuming there's a number of other streets that are kind of the real problem streets. Where are those locations that you hear or you see the most problems?
I mean, to be sincere, these freight lines go through neighborhoods. They're blocking between the freight lines and the freeway. It's very complicated sometimes to get away from them. And if they are stuck, if the train is stopped, sometimes it's cutting off 3 or 4 intersections at a time. We're not talking about only one. 800 West, 900 West, 10th West are some of the common ones that, many get frustrated. 600 West is another one. Then you have 400 North, 300 North. You also have 800 South and 900 South. This is only in Salt Lake City. And there is 3 or 4 other ones that are within the limits of the city. I cannot tell you enough how this is affecting our communities. We really need to start talking about this. If you don't live on the West Side, you don't know how bad it is. If you come visit the West Side, you might be stopped, but it gets worse.
So for those of you just joining us, this is Councilmember Alejandro Puy, who represents the 2nd District in Salt Lake City. And I guess in our final minute or two, talk about what are the solutions? Because I assume building overpasses and such is either not practical or not cost effective. What are the recommendations you have? Like, how can we address the issue as a city?
Well, obviously, because Salt Lake City doesn't own this issue, we don't own the trains, we don't own the train tracks. We need all the layers of government, from the federal government that has the infrastructure money, to our state legislators, with our county, to start finding solutions. Are there other routes that these trains could be taken instead of the middle of the neighborhood? If they're going to the West Inland Port area, do they have to cross through downtown? These questions need to be studied. We want them to study them. And this is why we need every day people from Salt Lake to tell us their story. Overpasses and underpasses are not out of the picture. I mean, many cities have raised the train tracks. Many cities have buried the train tracks. It is not impossible. Yes, it might cost money, but the impact and the positive impact of doing something like that could be huge.
Exactly. Well, and I guess that's the issue. I mean, when they built those originally, I mean, these were not issues, but the city's been built up. And now, streets that were not busy, 40, 50, 60 years ago are now major thoroughfares in Salt Lake City, as you mentioned. And so, and I'm assuming there's you've got to be ways of perhaps, notifying people if you're going to have a train that's 3 miles long that's going to take a half hour. I mean, it makes me wonder if there is some sort of obligation by whoever is managing the railroad of letting people know or doing it at a time of the day when you're not going to have a lot of traffic.
Well, on this issue, Salt Lake City added to our Salt Lake City budget a line item to study this and to find a company that has this technology. We have found a company that is testing screens that put sensors on the train tracks, and the screen will tell you if the train is coming and maybe how long the train is going to be there. So then you can make different decisions about your route. Potentially you can find on Twitter if your intersection is going to be blocked or not. We are funding one crossing, maybe up to 3 crossings, to test this technology out.
Interesting.
This is trying to patch the problem, but we are trying this technology.
Perfect. All right. Thank you. This is Councilman Alejandro Puy from the 2nd District in Salt Lake City. Thank you, Councilman. We appreciate you joining us on KSL at Night and raising this issue.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. And thanks for listening to KSL.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Tonight, stick around for a full hour of the best of from last night's show.
KSL at Night.
All right, welcome back to KSL at Night. This is your host, Derek Brown. And in this segment, we're going to talk with our intrepid KSL reporter, Lindsay Ertz, who is on the front line of about 7 different issues right now.
I'm so tired, Derek.
And this is the world of being an intrepid reporter. And so you could just be lazy on your job and not have very many stories, but that's not your style.
It's not, because I like truth and I like information, and what I'm after is good, solid stories. So,
well, and so let's talk about one that you just did, and this was late last night, right? And this is about WIC. Now, so one of the things we've been talking about a lot this week is the potential for a government shutdown. And the real issue in these shutdowns, when they happen, and it's only happened a couple of times, it's what is deemed essential.
Yeah.
Like, who's an essential worker? Who isn't?
And you think about it in terms of, like, you don't realize what the government funds in Utah until the government funding goes away, right? And then you're like, oh, this is where we get money for WIC, for the national parks,
exactly.
Right? And you're like, oh, okay, this is where the money comes from. So the state right now is sort of scrambling to figure out what do we fund. Last week, Governor Cox signaled the national parks would get their attention but he was pointedly asked whether any other critical programs would get funded. And to that, he replied no. Now, that was last week. This week, it's possible there's a different conversation happening as they sift through everything and realize that WIC provides money to women and children, about 41,000 women and children in Utah, specifically helping them get food for their babies, right? So it would be really unfair to say the administration doesn't care about women and children in Utah, but it's also fair to say they're not sure yet how they're going to fund all of these different programs.
And wouldn't that be one of those essential programs? I mean, because some things, I mean, that's always been the trick, right? What is essential? What's not? I remember my very first experience with a government shutdown was 20 plus years ago. I was, for my one and only time of my life, I was in Maui, and there's a national park there. And we had scheduled to go to see the volcano there, that national park. And it was shut down because of the government. You know, obviously, so state parks, I mean, or national parks are not necessarily essential, but you would think that women, infant, and children, in terms of the WIC program, would
and
qualify.
Certainly, I think the Cox administration realizes that, recognizes that, and values that. So I'm not here to say they don't. But
it's not a federal, it's a federal program,
it's
right?
A federal,
not a state program.
Right. It's a federal program, and it's 100% funded federally, right? So if they're going to kick in money, it's going to take our taxpayer money here in Utah to kick in money for that program. And that's a conversation they're weighing right now. When you look at the national parks, you kind of have to look at this from the state's perspective. The areas in and around the national parks survive on tourism. The money that comes into the state survives on that tourism, right? The national parks shut down, the state loses money. Now, that's not to say they don't prioritize women and children and families in providing for this WIC WIC program, and they have communicated to me offline that they absolutely care about that program. So I'm not here to suggest that they don't. However, It's not clear yet where the funding is coming from, because when I did this story yesterday, I got a statement from the Department of Health and Human Services, who administers this program, and they were saying, we're working with all the stakeholders to figure out what the options are. They said benefits will not be impacted through September, but September only goes until Saturday. So it's not totally clear yet what's going to happen after October 1st.
And so government funding, for those who are not aware, government funding, in theory, unless something happens, runs out. Is it Saturday?
It's
the
midnight. 30th? Midnight. It's Saturday at midnight.
And so, I mean, now whether it actually happens or not remains to be seen.
They're shut down, you're saying?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, my guess is, I mean, almost always they don't do this. They always figure out a way, like, it's like they're standing in front of a train on the train track,
right,
and right
state,
before the train gets there, they jump off.
But the state can't wait for that. Because
exactly. We have to plan.
Yeah, we have to plan. And if funds run out on October 1st, then families don't get food. You cannot tell me that's a good strategy, right? So the state is scrambling. They're trying to figure out how do they fund this if the government shuts down, and that's kind of what's happening right
now. And does the federal government have a contingency plan? I mean, do they have like a slush fund or other fund in the event something like this happens?
You would think there would be some runway, right? And that was my question to Department of Health and Human Services is, does this just cut off on October 1st, or is there some sort of runway? The other option you think through is, okay, perhaps there are nonprofits, right, who can step up and help supplement at least in the weeks, right? I don't know how much it costs to run the WIC program. All I know is that there's 41,000 women and children in Utah who use it. And so you have to imagine it's a hundreds of thousands of dollar program, right? What nonprofit is probably going to be able to step up and fund that? But at the same time, the state has to weigh, okay, how much is it going to cost to keep the national parks open? What about federally funded school lunches in Utah? Do we pay for that? Like, what do we pay for right now? And they have to calculate all that.
And I guess the frustrating thing is, if you're a state, I mean, you have to sort of go through the interplay of like the state of Utah with every federal program. I mean, we receive so much federal funding, mm-hmm, on so many sources. Mm-hmm. And I guess the other thing, as they think about it, is every state's going through the same thing, aren't they? I mean, every state across the country is doing this contingency plan of like, okay, now what?
Yeah, what do we do? But again, sometimes, you know, you're in the majority party here, Derek. Sometimes the majority party rails on the federal government, right, for how involved they are, or their red tape, their bureaucracy. But when you sit back and look at the numbers, the government is providing for a lot of stuff. Our federal taxes are paying for some of these programs, right, that really do, mm-hmm, impact here. So obviously there's broader conversations about how much we're spending and all of that jazz. Well,
and probably the conversation about whether we should be as entangled as we are. I mean,
sure.
My guess is there's going to be that angle. And it generally is. I mean, because we had a federal shutdown, was it 7 or 8 years ago?
It was 2019 or 2018 was the last one.
Because,
right?
I seem to recall that we opened the parks as a state and we paid for them,
and
right?
And we haven't gotten paid back.
Okay, because didn't Spencer Cox at the time, wasn't he the lieutenant governor?
Yes.
He went back to testify on this and request the funds back.
Yeah.
And we haven't received them.
Yeah, we haven't received them yet. And I did see some reporting. This wasn't my reporting, but reporting that said that Cox this time has asked that if they loan money to keep the national parks open, that we get paid back, like it's a loan instead of a gift, right? Or it's a loan to get that money back instead of we're just going to cover this for you.
Exactly.
So we'll see how it all shakes out. But it is concerning for these families where they're in limbo right now, right? And I think that's what we have to get back to is we're having the conversations all day long about what if the government shuts down, what happens? But these are direct people in Utah who are impacted on a daily basis with food for their children if this money runs out. Like, I wish the senators and Congress people could think about that when they're having these negotiations. Like, you are taking food off the people's table. Figure it out, you know? I think we all sense that frustration.
Absolutely. Well, and so I think that kind of urgency is one of the reasons, like, I'm of the opinion that they're going to figure this out at the last second, mm-hmm, because they almost always do. Now, they didn't back in, as you mentioned, 2018 or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's really rare. I mean, I think that the idea of the government defaulting on their international and monetary obligations is probably really, really unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I think what's going to be interesting is, you know, is there going to be Ukraine funding? Is there going to be border security funding? All that kind of stuff. And
right,
the next what, 3 days, I guess we'll know. We'll see this coming, you know, we'll see this coming around. But
yeah,
until
and
then,
I am expecting an update from the state as soon as they have something to tell me, right? These conversations kind of go like, well, they can't put this out yet because it's not solidified yet. So I want to have good information before I bring it to people to say this is what's happening. Yeah. So the governor's office has told me that they will let me know when they figure out what's happening with WIC. But they specifically didn't want to communicate the message. They don't care about women and families, because they certainly do. And again, I'm not suggesting that, but it is a priority question. And if they can't fund the WIC program, what happens?
Exactly. And just to be clear, this is different from the food stamp or SNAP program.
Yeah.
For that, those that are wondering.
That program gets kicked in with state funds, right?
I think there's a piece of that, but it also... It's a longer runway.
Oh, they have some runway. Yes.
Yes. So that doesn't end the same time that WIC does.
Got it. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you, Lindsay Ertz, always on the case, and we appreciate you being here with us for KSL at Night.
Happy to be here, Derek.
All right. Next up on KSL at Night, for felons in Utah, there's a program to help wipe the slate clean. So stay tuned. We're going to talk about a group that is helping ex-convicts expunge their records.
KSL at Night.
Welcome back to KSL at Night. This is Derek Brown, your host, and we're going to talk for a moment about a Utah organization that, I mean, this is more of a heartwarming story than, well, the last couple of stories we've talked about have been more downers, things like, federal shutdowns and budget crises and that sort of thing. This is one that I think is really important that we want to highlight. We know that this month is National Suicide Prevention Month, but it's also National Recovery Month. And to help people who are recovering from substance addiction, there's an organization that's called RASA, R-A-S-A, RASA, that is helping individuals get an expungement, free expungements. And so this is a group started by Noella Sudbury in 2022. And the objective was to help people who have been clean from substance abuse clear their records, because if they've got a record, it obviously has an impact on things like getting a job and housing and that sort of thing. So they have helped more than 9,600 Utahns, and I just think this is such a cool idea, and we are lucky to have Noella Sudbury, who is the founder and CEO, with us here on KSL at Night. So Noella, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much, Derek, for having me on the show. I'm excited to talk about what we're doing.
Well, and I love this idea, and I love that it's funny, because I've actually thought about this in the past and thought, you know what, someone ought to help people with this issue, and I love the fact that you, like, took it by the reins and you did it. So tell us about RASA. Like, tell us, you know, what its purpose is, and I'm curious kind of how you got into this.
Yeah, so RASA is a mission-driven legal tech company in Utah with the mission to make the process of clearing a criminal record simple and affordable for everyone who needs it. Having a criminal record is incredibly common and affects more than 1 in 4 people in Utah. And as you said, Derek, even old and minor criminal records can hold people back long after their involvement in the justice system.
No, that makes sense. I have a friend who literally, like, had a misdemeanor on his license for phishing, or on his record for phishing without a license. And we used to joke about it, but he had to disclose it, like, for job interviews, wherever he went. And I don't think he knew that he could get it expunged. But so, I mean, you're right in the fact that this has a major impact on someone, from minor ones like that to very serious ones. But yeah, so tell us how you, and when you get an expungement, help people understand, what is the net effect? That it effectively disappears from your record entirely?
Yes. So Utah has a criminal record expungement process. Criminal records are digital and permanent. They stay on your record forever, even those minor phishing licenses violations that you're talking about, unless you go through a legal process called an expungement. When you get your record expunged, you have the right as an individual to stop checking that box. We probably all have seen that box on a housing application or a job application that says, hey, have you ever been arrested? Have you ever been convicted of a misdemeanor or a felony? And that box prevents people from doing all kinds of things, but particularly from getting jobs. And so when you get your record expunged, you don't have to check that box anymore. And when a background check is run on you, your records will no longer appear on your criminal history.
So how did this come about? Like, how did you get the idea to do this and to, you know, start up what I think is a fantastic idea for so many people who probably don't even know that this is an option?
Totally. So I started my career back in 2009 as a public defender. And that's where I feel like I got really passionate about criminal justice reform. I felt like there were so many clients in the system that struggled with substance use, mental health issues, trauma, poverty, and the system wasn't necessarily treating those issues. And so there was this kind of like dissatisfying human churn. And then I saw many of my clients do the hard work to get into recovery, turn their lives around. But then years later, when they tried to get an apartment or get a job, they just encountered a brick wall. And it was just really sad for me to watch. And left the public defender's office, had done a bunch of stuff through my career, and kind of came back to this work through my experience as a policy advisor for the Salt Lake County Mayor, where we were trying to help people with criminal records get back into the workforce. And through that experience, just learned a ton about what technology can do and that it can really increase access to justice and help us to serve people at scale.
Well, and fundamentally, I think Utah is a state where we believe in second chances, and we believe that you can make mistakes. But if you're willing to move beyond that and change your life, you know, that you shouldn't be artificially held back. So I'm curious, do you have any, I mean, share with us some of the success stories. With the number of people you've been able to help, I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, really cool stories you have about people who have been able to sort of fix the past and make a new life. So give us a few of those if you have a moment to do that.
Absolutely. My favorite thing to talk about is our impact. So a couple of statistics here that are real and are happening for our clients. People without records are 63% more likely to get a job interview, and their wages on average go up by more than 20% just 1 year after record clearance. And as we're helping people get their records expunged, it continues to surprise me how quickly expunging a record can just completely transform someone's life. We have seen some of our clients go from being on government assistance, food stamps, WIC, public housing for generations to making jobs, to jobs where they're making $50,000 to $70,000 a year. They have 401k. They're able to open college savings accounts for their kids. They're able to buy homes. So if you think about just that, right, that we can help someone go from costing the government money to making money to being a taxpayer and creating a different future for their kid. What a transformative impact that is. And that's just one example. Many, many people report better jobs. They'll say things like, I always thought I would be the type of person that would just have a job. But now I feel like I can be the type of person that can have a career and the type of job that's full time, that comes with health insurance, which I need for my kids, that pays me enough money that I can create a different future for my family.
I love it.
And those are the impacts that we're seeing. And it's so incredible to be able to work at a place where I get to hear these stories every day.
I love it. So Noella, we've got Noella Sudbury, who's the founder and CEO of RASA. Tell me in the last 30 seconds that we've got, if someone is listening who has been, you know, who needs your services, who needs expungement and has been wondering how it is they go about doing this. And it's not a common process. I mean, I'm an attorney, but like, I don't think I would know exactly how to go about doing this because I haven't ever done this. So someone who's not an attorney or familiar with the legal system, you know, obviously, I mean, they're going to need help. Where do they go? Like, how does one get in contact with you or RASA?
Well, the best thing to do is to go to our website, which is rasa-legal.com. We have a simple technology tool where an individual can type in their name and date of birth, and in under 3 minutes, we can tell you what's on your record and whether it might be eligible for expungement under Utah law. During recovery month, the tool is free with the word recovery. That's posted right on our website if you go there. That really is the best way to see if you're eligible. And if you are eligible, that's the best way to get in touch with someone from our team. You'll be able to sign up for an appointment from there. But our technology does a lot of that front-end work and can also reach people all over the state.
All right. That's Noella Sudbury. Thank you for joining us. And for those of you who are listening, their organization can be reached at rasa-legal, rasa-legal.com. All right, Noella, thanks for joining us on KSL at Night.
Thanks for having me.
All right. And next up, have you ever been one of those folks who got stuck waiting for a train to pass, perhaps for 10, 15, or even 20 minutes, generally on the west side of Salt Lake City? Well, a city council member has started a campaign to raise awareness about this issue, and we're going to talk about that right up next.
KSL at Night. KSL at Night.
All right, welcome back to KSL at Night. I'm your host, Derek Brown, and we've had a lot of fun today. Covered a lot of things going on at the national level, but now we're going to bring it right here, make it local, and onto a local issue that is plaguing Utahns, and that is freight trains. Now, for those of you that have had the experience of being stuck behind a freight train or waiting for it to go, it's a really frustrating process. And we have a member of the Salt Lake City Council who has used what I love, and that is he's used humor to address the issue, to bring it to light and to make people aware of it. And that is City Council Member Alejandro Puy, who represents the 2nd District. So Council Member Puy, thanks for joining us on KSL at Night.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, so first of all, I got to say, I love the fact. So I've seen this this article you wrote, which is actually hysterically funny. And I love that because so many times in politics, you have people who have an issue that is kind of upsetting and they scream and yell and shout and whatever. And you've used, like, I was giggling when I read this, and I think you're going to get a lot more traction and a lot more people, you know, looking at the issue of freight trains when you do that. But anyway, on that note, tell us a little bit about, first of all, set the stage for us. What is the issue with freight trains in Salt Lake City that has gotten your attention?
So, sometimes it feels like we live on the wrong side of the train tracks. The trains come at random times for us. They are very long, sometimes 2 or 3 miles long. Sometimes they even stop on the tracks and you have no idea what's going on. You have no idea when you're going to be out of that trap and when you're going to be able to cross on to the other side for whatever reason. Sometimes it's an emergency. Sometimes you're going on a date or you have dinner reservations. Sometimes you just want to go to the other side for whatever reason. And it's affecting our community very, very badly on the west side of Salt Lake City. And we need to find solutions for this.
So, first of all, talk to us a little bit about the article that you wrote. And I got to set the stage here. Just what he's done is he has these great pictures of himself with the trains passing. And in one picture, you're having a barbecue and you've got steaks on the grill. Another one, the train's passing and you've got a floaty from a pool that you're sitting in. I mean, that's really, really funny. So, and where did he post this so that people could sort of see what it is you're talking about?
I mean, we created a website. It's tinyurl.com/slclctrains. tinyurl.com/slclctrains. But we, on the city council website and on the city council social media is being shared right now, and there are several articles being written about it. But yeah, we have tried to make fun of the things you could be doing when you're waiting for the train. You could be having a barbecue, or you could be enjoying a floaty as if you were on the pool, or you could be having a coffee, just enjoying the sight, a picnic maybe, or some plain table games. Those are none of the things that all of us want to do by the train tracks, but it feels like we lose hours of our day waiting for the train. Sometimes they take 40 minutes, 45 minutes, and sometimes even longer for a train to move and get out of their neighborhood, our neighborhood. And this is why we need to capture stories. Right now we're trying to get stories. Salt Lake City doesn't own the train tracks. Salt Lake City doesn't own these train companies. But, you know, we need to get stories of how this is affecting your life. Today we heard about a Salt Lake City dispatch member that read the story and told me that she had to guide a mother giving birth on how to get away from the stop train because she was stuck in it to get to the hospital. We heard about a family that lost access to a concert because they were late. You could be 45 minutes ahead of time, and this could put you way, way behind on this. I heard of a story of on a date, someone missing out on a date because they were stuck behind the train tracks, on the wrong side of the train tracks. So we want to hear your stories, no matter how silly they might be. We hear stories from, our safety emergency responders in our city sometimes, that they take the longer route because they want to avoid the chances they're going to be stuck by the train. Right now, what I need from everybody is to tell me their train story. How did it affect you? How is it affecting us every day? It might be a simple story, but we want to hear from you.
And where are the main issues in terms of streets? I mean, obviously, if you're on like 6th North or, you know, the 5th South, I mean, there's a number of sort of overpasses over the train tracks. But then I'm assuming there's a number of other streets that are kind of the real problem streets. Where are those locations that you hear or you see the most problems?
I mean, to be sincere, these freight lines go through neighborhoods. They're blocking between the freight lines and the freeway. It's very complicated sometimes to get away from them. And if they are stuck, if the train is stopped, sometimes it's cutting off three or four intersections at a time. We're not talking about only one. 800 West, 900 West, 10th West are some of the common ones that, you know, many get frustrated. 600 West is another one. Then you have 400 North, 300 North. You also have 800 South and 900 South. This is only in Salt Lake City. There is three or four other ones that are within the limits of the city. I cannot tell you enough how this is affecting our communities. We really need to start talking about this. If you don't live on the West Side, you don't know how bad it is. If you come visit the West Side, you might be stopped, but it gets worse.
So for those of you just joining us, this is Councilmember Alejandro Puy, who represents the 2nd District in Salt Lake City. And I guess in our final minute or two, talk about what are the solutions? Because I assume building overpasses and such is either not practical or not cost effective. What are the recommendations you have? Like, how can we address the issue as a city?
Well, obviously, because Salt Lake City doesn't own this issue, we don't own the trains, we don't own the train tracks. We need all the layers of government, from the federal government that has the infrastructure money to our state legislators, with our county, to start finding solutions. Are there other routes that these trains could be taken instead of the middle of the neighborhood? If they're going to the West Inland Port area, do they have to cross through downtown? These questions need to be studied. We want them to study them. And this is why we need every day people from Salt Lake to tell us their story. Overpasses and underpasses are not out of the picture. I mean, many cities have raised the train tracks. Many cities have buried the train tracks. It is not impossible. Yes, it might cost money, but the impact and the positive impact of doing something like that could be huge.
Exactly. Well, and I guess that's the issue. I mean, when they built those originally, I mean, these were not issues, but the city's been built up. And now, you know, streets that were not busy, you know, 40, 50, 60 years ago are now major thoroughfares in Salt Lake City, as you mentioned. And so, you know, and I'm assuming there's you've got to be ways of perhaps, I don't know, notifying people if you're going to have a train that's 3 miles long that's going to take a half hour. I mean, it makes me wonder if there is some sort of obligation by whoever is managing the railroad of letting people know or doing it at a time of the day when you're not going to have a lot of traffic.
Well, On this issue, Salt Lake City added to our Salt Lake City budget a line item to study this and to find a company that has this technology. We have found a company that is testing screens that put sensors on the train tracks, and the screen will tell you if the train is coming and maybe how long the train is going to be there. So then you can make different decisions about your route. Potentially, you can find on Twitter if your if your intersection is going to be blocked or not. We are funding one crossing, maybe up to three crossings, to test this technology out.
Interesting.
This is trying to patch the problem, but yeah, we are trying this technology.
Perfect. All right. Thank you. This is Councilman Alejandro Puy from the 2nd District in Salt Lake City. Thank you, Councilman. We appreciate you joining us on KSL at Night and raising this issue.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. And thanks for listening to KSL at Night. Stick around for a full hour of the best of from last night's show.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.